If it wasn't apparent before 2026, it certainly is now. The Strait of Hormuz is one of, if not the most important maritime choke points in the world. Due to a freak circumstance in both geography and geology, roughly half of all of the world's proven oil reserves are located around the Persian Gulf, west of the narrow Strait of Hormuz. As a result, because of the combined exports of countries around the Gulf like Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Qatar, and the UAE, roughly one-fifth of all the entire world's crude oil and LNG supplies travel through the Strait of Hormuz in a given year, which is the lifeblood that primarily fuels the economies of Asia like India, China, Japan, South Korea, and Southeast Asia. And on top of all of that oil and gas, approximately 30% of the world's supply of fertilizer transits through the strait as well, while the notoriously arid Gulf states also import about 85% of their collective food supply through the strait as well. The ability for Iran to enforce a blockade over this strait and shut all of this trade down was historically always viewed as being a theoretical doomsday sort of scenario that would probably never actually happen. For decades, expert analysis had long concluded that the consequences Iran would suffer by blockading the strait were going to be too great for them to ever even try. It was assumed that Iran would require a massive military effort to shut down the strait. It was assumed that Iran would be reluctant to shut down the strait out of a fear of invoking a retaliatory blockade on their own oil exports through Hormuz that similarly funds a third of their own government. And it was assumed that Iran would be fearful of shutting down the strait because it would inevitably incur a massive, overwhelming military response from the United States that would threaten the survival of the regime itself. But as it turned out in the end, all of those historical expert assumptions held for decades were proven to be brutally wrong. After the US and Israel launched a massive war against Iran with regime change as the openly stated objective, the regime felt as if they had nothing left to lose by shutting down the Strait of Hormuz and holding the trade through it hostage. And they ended up being able to do it for months with nothing other than cheap, mass-produced drones, small vessels, and naval mines, while they were also able to continue exporting all of their own oil through the strait until the US Navy eventually imposed their own blockade on the strait on Iranian shipping. The entire might of the US military, from all of its bases in the Middle East and from no less than 3 forward-deployed aircraft carrier strike groups, proved incapable of breaking Iran's grip over the strait. The shutdown of all the trade through the strait, including the immediate blocking of one-fifth of the world's oil and gas supplies, caused massive global economic damage and particularly harmed the Gulf states. While Washington and Tehran have theoretically agreed to negotiate a more permanent peace deal, the Hormuz genie also can never be put back in the bottle again now. Iran's success at shutting the strait down for so long and forcing the US and Israel to the negotiating table in the process has made the Islamic Republic realize just how much geographic power and leverage they truly have. Iran now plainly understands that it can simply continue to hold Hormuz and the global economy hostage whenever it wants something else from the world again at any point in the future, and that nobody, not even the mighty US military, will be capable of actually stopping them. That lesson that Iran has learned has also not been lost on the Gulf states, who've themselves now realized that they need to rapidly diversify their exports and imports away from Hormuz, or they'll continue facing this Iranian blackmail repeatedly again in the future that they won't be able to do anything to stop. Two of the countries in the Persian Gulf, Saudi Arabia and the UAE, had both the geographic potential and the foresight to have made contingency plans around Hormuz before this war. During the 1980s, when Iraq and Iran were at war with each other and both of them were busy blasting merchant shipping across the Persian Gulf, Saudi Arabia decided that it would be strategically prudent to build a new pipeline across their country's territory from the oil fields in the Persian Gulf over to their Red Sea coastline so that they could divert at least some of their oil exports around the Strait of Hormuz during a time of crisis. Simply called the East-West Pipeline, it was constructed precisely out of the fear that Iran could one day shut down the Strait of Hormuz and to hedge against it. Then, after theory became reality in early 2026, with Iran actually shutting the strait down, the Saudis were able to use the East-West Pipeline to divert approximately 7 million barrels of oil per day from the Persian Gulf to the Red Sea around Hormuz. An enormous volume that effectively represented the entirety of Saudi Arabia's usual export volume. Iran attempted to target the East-West Pipeline with drone and missile attacks during the war, but it proved to be a very difficult target to actually hit. The vast majority of the East-West pipeline is buried several feet underground, which makes it effectively invisible to most aerial sensors and attacks. And then, even if you did know the exact route, hitting the pipeline beneath the ground requires incredible accuracy, while explosions are also mostly absorbed by the ground, which makes it difficult to damage large sections of it. Iran targeted some of the pipeline's more vulnerable above-ground pumping stations with missiles and drones instead, but the Saudis were always able to quickly repair the inflicted damage within only a matter of days. In the end, the East-West pipeline enabled Saudi Arabia to be hardly affected by Iran's closure of the Strait of Hormuz at all. In April of 2026, more than a month deep into the war, the IMF reported that it projected Saudi Arabia's economy to still grow by 3.1% across the year, down only 1.4 percentage points from its pre-war projection. Similar to the Saudis, the UAE also had a pre-existing hedge in place to get around Iran's closure of the Strait of Hormuz, too. But it proved less adequate than the Saudis' workaround did. Dubbed the Hamshan Fujairah oil pipeline, or also the Abu Dhabi crude oil pipeline, the UAE opened this pipeline in the summer of 2012 for precisely the same reason that the Saudis had built their East-West pipeline: to reduce their strategic dependency on sending their oil exports through the Strait of Hormuz. It enables the UAE to pump oil from the Persian Gulf to the city of Fujairah, which is safely on the other side of the Strait of Hormuz on the Gulf of Oman. However, it only enabled the UAE to move around 1.8 million barrels of oil per day around the Strait of Hormuz during the war, which was only about half of their pre-war exports. So the UAE was incapable of getting the other half of their usual exports out of the country during the war. And this is a disadvantage that they never intend to experience again. They are already fast-tracking the construction of a brand new twin pipeline to follow along the route of the existing Abu Dhabi pipeline, which will effectively double their export capacity around the Strait of Hormuz and enable them to continue exporting pretty much all of their usual oil in the event that the strait gets shut down again in the future. This new twin pipeline to Fujairah is currently expected to be finished and operational by the end of 2027, and when it's done, both Saudi Arabia and the UAE will be able to divert nearly all of their usual oil exports around the Strait of Hormuz in the event of another crisis, significantly reducing Iran's potential leverage over them. The other countries in the Persian Gulf, however, by the circumstances of geography, are not as fortunate. Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, and Iraq all possess no geographic ability to circumvent the Strait of Hormuz across their own territory. Instead, these countries all have to rely on the graces of their neighbors during a Hormuz crisis to continue their usual exports and imports, which makes their abilities to resist Iran's closure of the Strait of Hormuz significantly more challenging. To illustrate the consequences of this, consider the divergence in economic projections right now for 2026 between Saudi Arabia and Qatar. As I previously noted, the IMF expects that Saudi Arabia's economy will grow by 3.1% in 2026, down only 1.4 percentage points from their pre-war forecast, largely because Saudi Arabia was still able to transfer the vast majority of their oil exports around the closed Strait of Hormuz. Qatar, with no such geographic possibility, has a dramatically worse outcome now. The IMF currently projects that Qatar's economy will contract by 8.6% this year, largely as a result of the war and the blockage on all of their LNG exports moving through Hormuz for months. And that's after their economy grew by 2.8% the year previously in 2025. Qatar, Bahrain, and Kuwait all currently have no pipelines that connect anywhere beyond the Persian Gulf, while Iraq has very few. Almost all of Iraq's oil reserves are either concentrated in the south near the Persian Gulf or in the mountainous north in the Kurdish-majority areas. As a result, more than 90% of Iraq's oil exports have historically moved through the Persian Gulf, which means that after Iran shut the Strait of Hormuz down, Iraq's oil exports completely collapsed along with the country's oil production. All four of these countries had few alternatives to get around Iran's blockage of the Strait of Hormuz, and so they were all forced to largely improvise their logistics on the spot. Iraq came up with a route they called the Pipeline on Wheels, a trucking route from the oil fields in Iraqi Kurdistan that transported oil and trucks across Syria towards the Bani Yas refinery and export facilities on the Syrian Mediterranean coast, which was able to safely transport around 200,000 barrels of oil per day around the Strait of Hormuz closure. While impressive, that still only represented about 6% of Iraq's pre-war oil exports. The only other route that Iraq had around the Strait of Hormuz was its Kirkuk-Ceyhan oil pipeline, extending from the oil fields in Iraqi Kurdistan through Turkey to the Turkish port of Ceyhan on the Mediterranean. However, it too only has a maximum capacity of around 200,000 barrels per day, a fraction of Iraq's usual production capacity. In the aftermath of the war, Iraq is now seeking to nearly quadruple the Kirkuk-Ceyhan oil pipeline's capacity to 770,000 barrels per day instead, and they plan to accomplish it within only a few months' time. Before the war, the port of Khor Fakkan on the UAE's Gulf of Oman coast primarily served as a transshipment port. Containers arrived by ship and were transferred directly onto another ship, and very few containers actually left the port by road. Only around 100 trucks a day usually even did so. But after the Strait of Hormuz shut down, all of that changed dramatically. Khor Fakkan suddenly became the UAE's primary gateway port outside of Hormuz, enabling ships arriving from Europe, Asia, and Africa to unload without having to cross through Hormuz into the Persian Gulf. Containers could be unloaded at Khor Fakkan and then driven on highways inland, which proved to be a godsend for maintaining the imports of food and other goods for the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, and Iraq during the war. In a flash, the number of trucks arriving at Khor Fakkan exploded from only around 100 a day to more than 7,000 a day, while the numbers of weekly container movements through the port exploded from about 2,000 to 50,000 as well. Almost overnight, the Arab states around the Persian Gulf essentially recreated the historical overland caravan routes across the deserts that they had used to rely upon before the advent of large-scale maritime trade through the Gulf. But while trucking around the Strait of Hormuz proved sufficient enough for imports of food and other consumer goods, it was never going to be sufficient enough to replace oil exports. A popular meme that surfaced on the internet during the war was this idea posted to X by a man named Harf Goenka, an Indian billionaire industrialist who proposed trucking oil through the deserts of Arabia around the Strait of Hormuz. It was accompanied by scathing commentary like, "Bro thinks they can just Mad Max a couple million barrels of crude through the deserts of Oman every day." In reality, replacing all of the lost oil exports through the Strait of Hormuz with trucking was never going to be feasible. The area of the Arabian Peninsula between the Persian Gulf and the Arabian Sea is known as the Rub al-Khali, or the Empty Quarter. A vast, inhospitable, and almost completely empty desert with very few roads and other infrastructure traversing anywhere across it. As a result, somebody on a Reddit thread about this meme calculated that it would take a minimum of 55,000 tanker trucks just to match the capacity that usually flows through the Strait of Hormuz. It would mean filling up and sending off a truck every 0.8 seconds, 24 hours a day. And if you placed all of these trucks end to end, they'd be twice as long as the entire current route through the desert and back. Which means that the Saudis and Omanis would have to construct dramatically more road infrastructure through one of the most inhospitable environments on Earth to meet the demand. That's not something that can be accomplished on such short notice, obviously, which means that trucking all of the lost oil around the Strait of Hormuz was never going to be a feasible option during wartime. Now, in the aftermath of the war, there are multiple logistical strategies floating around in the Persian Gulf to eliminate everybody's remaining overdependency on the Strait of Hormuz going forward. Qatar is usually the world's leading exporter of liquefied natural gas, or LNG. But, as is obvious, all of Qatar's LNG exports have no choice but to travel through the Strait of Hormuz, and when it's blocked, they currently have no alternative. To resolve this, Qatar would need to either construct a gas pipeline through the UAE's territory to either Fujairah or Oman, or they would need to construct a much longer gas pipeline through the territory of Saudi Arabia to the Red Sea, or even further across Saudi territory and the countries of the Levant towards the Mediterranean coast. And none of these options are particularly palatable for them. Wherever the pipelines end up at, Qatar would need to construct brand new, ultra-expensive liquefaction facilities outside of the Gulf in order to turn the gas into liquid for export on board the tanker ships, which will increase the cost required for them substantially. At the same time, Qatar would be effectively exchanging their dependence on Iran for exports through the Strait of Hormuz towards a dependence on the UAE or Saudi Arabia for pipeline exports instead, two countries whom Qatar has had highly strained relations with in the recent past. It wasn't that long ago, just between 2017 and 2021, when both Saudi Arabia and the UAE severed their relations with Qatar and enforced a complete land, sea, and air blockade over the country. So Qatar would be reluctant to put their critical alternative gas export routes through either of these countries, but they also don't really have any other option. One of the biggest obstacles standing in the way of the Gulf states from diversifying their logistics around the Strait of Hormuz, historically, was the inconvenient space on the board that was occupied by the Assad regime in Syria. For more than half a century, while the Assad family dominated Syria, Syria's foreign policy was kept in close alignment with the Iranians and the Russians, and in fierce opposition to the Western world. That, along with the devastating civil war that wrecked Syrian society for more than 13 years between 2011 and 2024, meant that the geographic space occupied by Syria was long off limits to pipelines and trucking routes for the Gulf states who were attempting to build alternative infrastructure paths around the Strait of Hormuz. This elimination of Syria's geography from consideration, in addition to the elimination of Israel's geography because of the Arab states' opposition to Israel, meant that in recent history, the only possible path for pipelines and trucks to take away from the Persian Gulf towards the Mediterranean had to take the long route through Iraq, through the Zagros Mountains in northern Iraq, and then across Turkey's Anatolian Peninsula towards the Turkish Mediterranean coast instead. In 2024, before the Assad regime unexpectedly collapsed, the Iraqi government approved of a new crude oil pipeline project from their southern oil fields to the Jordanian port of Aqaba on the Red Sea through only Iraqi and Jordanian territory, avoiding both Syria and Israel. 2 years later, in May of 2026, more than a month deep into the Iran war and the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, Iraq announced the construction on this Basra-Aqaba pipeline had finally been fast-tracked and begun. And that once it was finished, it would enable the Iraqis to transfer roughly 2.5 million barrels of oil per day around the Strait of Hormuz to the Red Sea, or about 70% of their usual total oil exports. $1.5 billion for the project has already been committed, although no completion date has yet been officially announced. Whenever it is finished, however, in combination with the pipeline on wheels and the projected expansion of the Kirkuk-Ceyhan crude oil pipeline, Iraq will be able to join both Saudi Arabia and the UAE in being able to divert nearly all of their oil exports around the Strait of Hormuz during another crisis in the future. The geographic advantage of being able to run pipelines through Syria's territory towards the Mediterranean coastline was always widely recognized by everyone from very early on, of course. But history and geopolitics just frequently intervened to make any pipelines across Syrian territory effectively impossible. After Syria first gained their independence from France in 1946, the US heavily backed the construction of the Trans-Arabian Pipeline, or TAP Line, from the giant oil fields of Saudi Arabia on the Persian Gulf through Jordanian and Syrian territory onwards to Lebanon's Mediterranean coast. However, in order to take the shortest possible path to the Mediterranean while avoiding Israel, the route of TAP Line ran through the Golan Heights region of far southwestern Syria, which, of course, was later taken over by the Israelis during the Six-Day War of 1967. The Israelis then came to control this section of the TAP Line, and while they continued to allow Saudi oil to flow through it, the pipeline became a frequent target of sabotage by Palestinian militant groups that degraded its capacity. After years of nearly constant bickering between the Saudis and Syria and Lebanon over transit fees, the emergence of supertankers moving through the Strait of Hormuz, and frequent pipeline breakdowns due to all of the sabotage attempts, the section of the pipeline beyond Jordan extending through the Golan Heights and Lebanon was permanently shut down in 1976, eliminating TAP Line's direct access to the Mediterranean. And then, the rest of the pipeline through Jordan was also shut down by the Saudis in 1990, in retaliation for Jordan's support of Saddam Hussein's invasion and conquest of Kuwait. And it's remained completely inoperable ever since then. Another crude oil pipeline across Syria was constructed in the 1950s between the Iraqi city of Kirkuk and Syria's Mediterranean port of Banias. But Israeli forces bombed the pipeline during the 1956 Suez Crisis, while later in 1982, the Assad regime shut the pipeline down completely after they aligned with the Iranians against Saddam during the Iran-Iraq War. Whatever was left of the pipeline was then bombed again by the Americans during the 2003 invasion of Iraq, and has been permanently inoperable ever since then. The idea of building a natural gas pipeline from Qatar directly to Europe via Turkey is another grand project that's been discussed for decades now. Qatar possesses the third largest proven reserves of natural gas in the world. But as a tiny peninsula that's hemmed in by Saudi Arabia, it has always relied on exporting its gas in liquid form aboard tanker ships to markets through the Strait of Hormuz instead of through pipelines. Constructing a gas pipeline from Qatar to Europe would benefit Qatar by providing them with a major bypass around the Strait of Hormuz, while it would also benefit Europe by providing them with more direct access to piped gas from Qatar, reducing the reliance on piped gas from Russia. The shortest and most geographically easy route for this proposed gas pipeline to take has always been across Saudi Arabia and then through Jordan and Syria into Turkey and onwards to Europe. But because of how the pipeline would inherently reduce Europe's reliance on Russian gas, the Russians pressured their allies in the Assad regime to suddenly abandon all of their plans for the pipeline completely in 2011. And shortly after that, the civil war erupted in Syria that destroyed most of the pipeline infrastructure in the country that still remained, and which also kept Syria's territory completely off limits to any further consideration for more than a decade. Roughly 6,300 kilometers worth of oil and gas pipelines still existed in Syria immediately before the civil war, while the country was also domestically producing around 380,000 barrels of oil per day. But across the civil war, the pipelines, pumping stations, and export facilities in Syria grew to become symbols of the Assad regime's authority, in addition to military objectives and major sources of revenue. By the time the Assad regime finally collapsed near the end of 2024, swaths of Syria's energy transportation network had been heavily damaged or looted or otherwise made dysfunctional. The country's domestic oil production plummeted from 380,000 barrels per day pre-war to only 110,000 barrels per day post-war, while the nation's rail infrastructure was similarly devastated as well. Out of the roughly 1,500 miles worth of railways that existed in Syria before the war, more than 60% of them were either damaged or knocked out of service throughout the course of the war, leaving only about 600 miles left that are still operational today that are usually under very heavy constraints. Thus, Syria has a long history going back decades now of having pipelines running across its territory getting targeted and destroyed during conflicts. And so the newly stabilized government that's taken over the country since 2024 certainly has their work cut out to show that that history won't also be its future. Still, now that the long civil war in Syria is generally seen as being over and with the anti-Western Assad regime out of the picture, there might finally be an opportunity to take advantage of Syria's geography as a natural energy corridor between the Persian Gulf and Europe. Ahmed al-Shara, Syria's new president, has recently proposed reviving the old but still never realized Four Seas project, which envisions transforming Syria into a central logistics node for pipelines, railways, and highways, linking the Mediterranean, the Persian Gulf, the Caspian, and Black Seas all together, and turning Syria into an alternative overland logistics corridor around both the Strait of Hormuz and the Suez Canal, which have been frequently menaced by Iran and the Houthis in Yemen. And in many ways, this vision is already starting to take a little bit of hold. The pipeline on wheels, the oil trucking route between northern Iraq and the Syrian coast that was improvised while Iran was shutting down the Strait of Hormuz during the war, is still operational. The old Arab gas pipeline is once again operational and carrying Egyptian gas into southern Syria, while the recently constructed Kilis-Aleppo pipeline is also operational and carrying Azerbaijani gas through Turkey's pipeline network into northern Syria. For the Persian Gulf states, additional major interlocking infrastructure corridors across Syria are also currently being considered as a part of this Four Seas initiative. The first, between the Persian Gulf and Syria's Mediterranean coast, consists of two possible projects. The long-discussed natural gas pipeline from Qatar to Syria that will enable Qatar to diversify their gas exports around the Strait of Hormuz, in addition to another proposal to revive the long-defunct Tapline corridor between the oil fields of Saudi Arabia and the Syrian Mediterranean coast as well, giving the Saudis the ability to diversify their oil exports around both the Strait of Hormuz and the Suez Canal. Another corridor between Iraq and Syria proposes restoring and expanding the long-defunct Kirkuk-Banias oil pipeline as well, giving Iraq another option to get their own oil exports around the Strait of Hormuz, too. To help facilitate all of these plans, the Trump administration in the United States has substantially lifted sanctions on Syria, including restoring Syria's access to the SWIFT global payments network. Both Chevron and ConocoPhillips have already signed preliminary agreements with Syria, including the country's first-ever offshore oil and gas development project, while Qatari-US-Turkish consortium have already signed a multi-billion-dollar energy deal with Syria as well. And in addition to these pipeline corridors across Syria, new railways are being planned as well. Turkey, Jordan, and Syria's new government have already signed a trilateral memorandum of understanding to resurrect the long-defunct Hejaz Railway, a rail project originally constructed all the way back during the Ottoman period that connected Saudi cities like Medina to Damascus and the Mediterranean coast. Large sections of the Hejaz Railway were destroyed by the Arab Revolt during the First World War, however. And over the decades that followed, the rest was split apart by new borders, dismantled for scrap, or simply abandoned. It has been dysfunctional for virtually all of living memory. But reviving it today could open up a new critical import route for food for Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states that currently overwhelmingly rely on the Strait of Hormuz for 85% of their food imports. The Saudis have even suggested developing parts or even all of the railway as a high-speed train network with speeds of 125 miles per hour, which would become the second high-speed railway to ever open in the Middle East after Saudi Arabia's own Haramain high-speed railway between Mecca, Jeddah, and Medina. Building out all of this infrastructure across Syria could serve multiple geopolitical aims. It could enable the Persian Gulf states to diversify their exports and imports away from the Strait of Hormuz and undermine Iran's capability to hold the global economy hostage again. It can help Europe diversify their own energy import destinations and further reduce their reliance on Russian energy. While it can also help underwrite Syria's economic reconstruction and recovery in the wake of their civil war through lucrative transit fees and through kickstarting their own oil production back up again as well. Nonetheless, there are still a lot of headwinds going against the Syria plan. In 2021, the World Bank estimated that the cost of fully rebuilding Syria back to its pre-war level of development was a staggering $400 billion, which has no doubt grown over the years of further war and deterioration since then. Rebuilding Syria's railway network alone might cost as much as $5 billion, and that doesn't even include any of the plans for restoring the Hejaz Railway or building out a new high-speed railway line that didn't even exist pre-war. Rebuilding Syria's wrecked infrastructure will be expensive enough, let alone building out any brand new infrastructure. While the historical risks associated with Syria's instability probably won't just go away either. Both the proposed Qatar gas pipeline and the restored Kirkuk-Banias oil pipeline would travel through vast expanses of sparsely populated desert where remnants of ISIS and Iranian-backed Shiite militias continue to remain active, meaning that securing the safety of all of these pipeline routes across Syria is far from a certainty. While possibly even more problematically, the largest and fastest-growing energy market for the Gulf producers isn't even in Europe at all. It's in the other direction, in Asia. The overwhelming majority of the Persian Gulf's energy resources flow to the east. And that share is continuing to grow with every passing year as Europe continues to decarbonize and increases its LNG imports from the United States. Building massively time-consuming, expensive, and geopolitically risky infrastructure across Syria to the Mediterranean works to get around the Strait of Hormuz, but it's also in the opposite direction where most of the Persian Gulf's exports are actually heading towards, which reduces a lot of the project's potential usefulness. Nonetheless, the geopolitical benefits of undermining what is currently Iran's greatest geographic advantage, its ability to threaten and close the Strait of Hormuz, might alone outweigh all of the various possible drawbacks. Iran may have been able to use this leverage over Hormuz to come out ahead during this most recent war, but if the Gulf states, America, and Europe can claw that leverage away from Iran by diversifying their pipeline and railway routes around the Strait of Hormuz, Iran might very well end up losing the peace in the long term by losing its ability to credibly do the same thing again in the future. And in that future, during another potential conflict with Iran, the Iranians will be the ones who will be in the much, much worse position to negotiate from. Now, if you're anything like me, your email inbox is probably a complete disaster. Every website you've ever made an account on seems determined to email you forever. Advertisers somehow always know exactly what you've been looking at online, and it can be a little unsettling just how much of your digital life ends up tied to just a single email account. The reality is that email has become the front door to almost everything we do online, which is why it's worth using one that's actually built around privacy instead of advertising. And that's why this video is sponsored by ProtonMail. Proton was created by a group of scientists who met at CERN that wanted to build an email service where your data actually belonged to you instead of a big tech company. Because Proton is based in Switzerland, it's protected by some of the strongest privacy laws in the world. And thanks to their use of end-to-end zero-access encryption, not even Proton itself can read the contents of your emails. Your data is truly, safely your own only. If you've been using Gmail for years, switching over also isn't nearly as painful as you might think. Proton's Easy Switch feature lets you import all of your emails and contacts in just a few clicks. And you can even connect to your existing Gmail account so you can send and receive emails from both inboxes in one place while you transition at your own pace. And best of all, you can get started right now completely for free. Just head to my link at proton.me/reallifelore to sign up and start securing your data today. Using my link will also help support my channel tremendously at the same time. And as always, thank you so much for watching.